podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Cricket Unfiltered. I am Menners, and we're here to wrap up day three of the second test, New Zealand hosting Australia in Christchurch. And it was an absolutely scintillating day's play of test cricket. New Zealand started the day 2 for 134, 40 runs ahead. They were bowled out for 372, setting Australia 279 to win. Then a top order collapse or Australia edged to 4 for 77 at stumps, needing a further 202 runs to win. I'm joined by Jono Baruch, freelance sports writer for Fox Sports. Jono, crazy days test cricket.
Thanks for having me back, Menners. Nice to be back with you. Crazy is the right way to put it. As you said, it's been an absolutely scintillating day of test cricket, really back and forth, but you definitely have to say it's the host day today. But so much to talk about.
Yeah, I think the hosts are in the box seat from here. Australia needing over 200 to win, just 6 wickets in hand, and we could see a famous victory from the Kiwis after being written off after the first test. But let's start at the beginning of the day. And New Zealand started well, but again, Pat Cummins, showing all his skill, came in and got the wicket of Latham just when Australia was looking really in trouble. You know, New Zealand were 3 for 155, and a good wicket there from Cummins. And then we saw Mitchell and Ravindra get together and put on a century partnership. So the day started very well for New Zealand, Jono. I mean, they looked like they were going to set Australia, you know, not 280, but maybe 380, 400.
Well, if it wasn't for one of your tweets, Menners, I had in my head all day that this was actually day four, but then I saw your tweet. I'm like, oh, it's actually day three. So when Ravindra and Mitchell were batting together, I thought, well, they're batting really carefree at the moment. They don't look bothered. Australia were still getting the ball in the right area, but were missing chances, and they were riding their luck. Mitchell especially was riding his luck to a very, I want to say, a nice-ish 50. But they were batting together. They looked like they were going well. But as you said, Pat Cummins, so often as the bowling captain, he did it late in the day yesterday when he removed Kane Williamson. Did it earlier this morning when he removed Tom Latham to really open the door slightly for Australia. But as you said, with Ravindra and Mitchell batting together, it really just looked like they were going to build a lead. And for a moment there, it looked like New Zealand were going to set absolute Mount Maunganui or something for Australia to go and chase at the end there. It was going to be massive. But lucky for Australia, they had that little patch after lunch where they took a few quick wickets and proved themselves to, once again, they can let things drift, this Australian bowling attack, but they're so relentless and so good at being disciplined. And yes, there might be chances that go down in the field, but because of their discipline, they're able to just switch back on, have these little patches where they can go and take, I think they took 3 for 15 after lunch in that first hour to really get the game back on an even keel. And really sort of set itself up to what we got for the rest of the day, that little patch after lunch on at the end of Ravindra and Mitchell batting together, who really put New Zealand in the driver's seat.
Yeah, most certainly did. I thought Latham played well for his 73, and a very good review by Australia to get him out, just the faintest edge. And that was the only wicket New Zealand lost in that first session. They went to lunch 3 for 243. They led by 149. And then the session after lunch started very oddly, with Australia trying to fill a few overs before the new ball. So Marnus was bowling medium pace bouncers with the field set back to Ravindra. There was no mid on or mid off. There was a backstop in place. And to be fair to the Aussies, Marnus almost got a wicket third ball. Ravindra had a swing at one that was sort of just bounced short of Hazelwood down at fine leg. Ravindra and Mitchell brought it going.
I just want to know what the conversation was between Marnus and Pat. So clearly they start with Travis Head after lunch. There's a couple of overs to the new ball. It's like, yeah, we're just going to bowl a couple of part-timers to get to the new ball. I just really want to know what that conversation was between Marnus and Pat. When Marnus says, yeah, I'm going to bowl same up. Well, why? Like, who thought that was a good idea, honestly?
Honestly, that's one feature of a fast bowling captain. They love going to the bouncer tactic.
Sorry for cutting you off. As I said, like, you're right, it nearly bought them a wicket, which would have been friggin' hilarious. But it was just, the over ended up going for 9 runs. He wasn't come back, and it's nine runs probably wasted from Australia. But as you said, it was just a little bit of humour throughout the day.
Indeed. So Ravindra Mitchell put on 123 together, and New Zealand got to 3 for 278. And Australia took the new ball, and then Australia made the breakthrough. They took 3 for 18, Australia. So the first to go was Mitchell, caught behind a terrific delivery from Hazelwood, just bounced off a length, beat Mitchell for pace and bounce and movement. So he was gone for a well-made 58. Then Cummins got Ratchan out, caught behind, defending the first ball of a new spell. And again, that was a terrific delivery from Cummins. It viciously bounced off a length, caught the edge, and he was gone, caught behind as well. So the two batters who'd been in terrific form out pretty quickly to the new ball. And then to top it off, Blundell smacked the long hop off Cameron Green to Marnus at cover, who dived to his left to take a great catch. And at that stage, New Zealand had lost 3 for 18, and they were 296 for 6.
Yeah, just on the Ravindra dismissal, batted brilliantly. It's been a fair bit of commentary. I'd like your take on this, Menace. There's been a fair bit of commentary that he's batting a bit too high still in that New Zealand order. He made that, had a wonderful World Cup, made a brilliant double ton against South Africa early in the summer. But there's been a lot of commentary around him still not knowing the right modes of and sort of when to go through the gears as a test batter. In white ball cricket, you could sort of afford to start and keep going at that same tempo, really. But in red ball cricket, because of his youth, that he's only really just broken out as a test batter. I think Mark Richardson in the commentary box was very strong on this, that he did it in the, I think it was, when did he make his 50? It wasn't the first innings. It was in the last test in Wellington, where he got to 50 beautifully and then flushed it a wide one and then got out. Similar today with getting to 80, looked very likely that it was going to bring up three figures against Australia. But as he said, Cummins brings himself on, first ball of his new spell, finds that outside edge of him just wafting at one and caught behind by Alex Carey, who had a very good day behind the stumps after a shocking moment late in the day yesterday. What's your take on Ravindra? Is he too high in the New Zealand order?
No, I like him at 4. Maybe if he was playing for, you know, a really strong nation like Australia, you might have him at 5 or 6. But I think that New Zealand, you know, looking at their batting lineup, 4 is a good spot for him. You know, he's behind Williamson and he'll develop. And this is great experience for him. And I thought that 82 was spectacular. And I actually don't think it was a bad shot. I just think we saw Cummins' brilliance there. You know, that's why he's averaging, you know, 21 runs per wicket at test level, because he just found some bounce. He found some seam movement and found some extra pace and beat him just on skill. And, you know, you look at Cummins, he's had a pretty quiet series, but in this innings when Australia really needed him, he got Latham, Williamson and Ravindra at 3 crucial times. But yeah, no, I like where Ratchan is in the order. I'm happy with that. Jono?
Yeah, I just thought it was really interesting commentary. I agree with you in the sense that I like him coming in behind. He's sort of sandwiched in between the two experienced players. So there's Latham up the top, there's Williamson at 3, you have Ratchan at 4, and then you've got Daryl Mitchell at 5. So I like that he's sandwiched in between there, so he can bat with Williamson and then bat with Mitchell and then really learn off the two most experienced and most important players in that New Zealand batting lineup. And he's only going to continue breaking out and becoming a star. I agree with you. I thought his 80 today was absolutely spectacular. But it's one for him to keep learning on, I guess.
And all right, so here's something that jumped out at me, and it was sort of going on around this time and heading up to the tea break. I actually really saw the inferiority complex of the Kiwis coming out with the commentary. I was listening to it on various, watching it, I was listening to it, and for me watching, once the Kiwis got 200 in front, I thought they have a huge chance here. The Australia's batting is flimsy. Everyone was saying, oh, the pitch is getting better. New Zealand need minimum 300 to make a game of it. And I was thinking, has anyone been watching Australia? And then I realized this is the Kiwi inferiority complex. Like, they were in front of the game. After that Mitchell-Ravindra partnership, they were in front. Chasing over 200 in the fourth innings of any test match is never easy. And then if you can push it up like the Kiwis did to almost 300, you're in with a really good chance. And, I don't want to say I sort of foretold what was going to happen later in the day, but I could just see that Kiwi inferiority complex that, oh, we need 500 against Australia because it's a flat pitch. I mean, back yourselves a little bit.
I think it's kind of like, I think it's coming from a place where they haven't been in Australia in a test match since November 2011. It's been longer than that since they've won against Australia in their own country. So I think in their mind, they're still, you're right, it is an inferiority, but they're building it up and it's like, oh, the might of Australia, the world test champions, like they've always been little brother to them. They'd never bested them. So, and I don't know if you want to say it's playing into the narrative, Kiwis nice guys, because it's definitely not that. There is a time, especially when you say minutes, when you're in front of the game, you can puff your chest out, really boss the game and really take it to your opposition, and especially with so much time left in the game. So yeah, it was puzzling, but I could totally understand where it was coming from.
Yeah, I get it, but it just made me like I just really saw their inferiority complex, because New Zealand have done bloody well to come back into this game, where you think about where they were like 8 for 100 on the first day, and now they're in the box seat going into day 4. But I just want to continue. So the Australia gets 3 quick wickets, then there's a stunning little counter attack from Scott Kugelein, who just started slogging with Henry leading up to the tea break. So then New Zealand go to tea, sorry, with Glenn Phillips. So New Zealand go to tea 6 for 345. They scored 102 runs and lost 3 wickets in that second session. So that's what I'm saying, Jono. The first two sessions, New Zealand won. They lost 4 wickets. They scored over 200 runs. That's a win for me. And then after tea, I think that's where they stuffed it up. Glenn Phillips was out bowled by Nathan Lyon. Terrific off spinner. Again, first ball of a new spell. Just spun back from outside off stump and crashed into his stumps. And then Henry was out slogging one off Lyon for 16. So Lyon got 2 quick wickets. And then Southee was out caught in the slips off Cummins. Good catch from Carey again. Sorry, not the slips. So that was the record, wasn't it? Carey caught Southee to take 10 catches for the match. He's only the second Australian to do that. So that's a terrific record. And then Kugelheim was the last player out for 44. He was out to Lyon, slogging one into the outfield. I think a deep long on he was caught. So they lost 4 for 27 after tea. And they set Australia 279 to win. So in the end, they did fall away quite dramatically. Lyon 3 for 49 and Cummins 4 for 62 did the damage. I mean, at this stage, Jono, were you thinking 279 is enough for the Kiwis, or what did you think?
I was thinking that it was enough, and purely because of, like, while Australia have enough class in the shed to be able to get the runs, like as you said, Australia's top order is as flimsy as anything right now. So, and it's kind of halves back on your point to the fetus language of the commentary box, that we've set ourselves a target. Matt Henry's having the game of his life. Ben Sears is bowling in pace. Tim Southee, yeah, has dropped away, but with a pace wise, but is still a quality seam bowler in his home conditions. Like that, it should be enough to account for Australia. So I had I had New Zealand slightly in front, and fast forwarding a bit to the end of the day, but you look at it, they've taken four top order Australian wickets now. They're well and truly driving the bus, even though Australia has had their most destructive pair at the crease overnight, and with runs to get and plenty of time left in the match. But yeah, going into the change of innings, I had it definitely as New Zealand's game to lose, which is remarkable, as you said, Menas, considering where they were halfway through day one.
Yeah, absolutely. New Zealand lost 7 for 94 at the end. They were 3 for 278. They lost 7 for 94. They probably should have set Australia another 50, but they didn't. Cummins, the hero, 4 for 62, as I said before, just took crucial wickets. So did Nathan Lyon. So if Australia go on to chase this down, they can thank again their bowling attack for really performing spectacularly today. But let's talk about the batting. A lot of questions, Jono. So Smith out, LBW, Matt Henry, Australia 1 for 15. Marnus, he's dropped in the slips by Southie. He was dropped in the slips by Mitchell and then caught and bowled in the same over by Sears, Australia, 2 for 22.
Yeah, a couple balls later.
So what do you think? I mean, are you over the Steve Smith experiment with him opening?
Very close to. I think this is so interesting. Cameron Green was always going to come back into that Test 11. They found a spot for him at number four. It was great that Steve Smith put his hand up to say, yeah, I'll go open one last challenge. The problem is Steve Smith, I think, forgot what he's really good at, and that is problem solving. All of Smith's best innings have come when he's come in, Australia's been in a little bit of a jam. He's had to problem solve and negotiate his way through in innings to get himself to either three figures or get Australia to a respectable score that they can either defend or go have their bowlers bowl at something and really set them up for a match. Right now, when he's opening the batting, he's coming up then and it's like, okay, I've got a problem, as in it's a brand new ball coming at me. They're probably not going to bounce me, but it's a brand new ball, a hard new ball, which I'm not used to facing. So no wonder why he's struggled. He's only passed 50 once, and that's probably the best time, the best is look opening the batting. He's done it for about 8 innings now. And the problem is Australia don't play another red ball match until India come in November. So there's two questions, I think, from me, Menas, and I'll get your opinion. Do we look at Smith's numbers and treat him as Steve Smith, the opening batter, and say, well, Smith, Steve, if you want to open the batting for the Indian series, you actually need to commit to becoming an opener, which means making yourself available to play some Sheffield Shield cricket and get some red ball cricket under your belt to actually have some exposed form? Or are Australia too comfortable with picking the status quo and just picking him because he's Steve Smith? There's going to be a discussion, not for this test match and down the line, for whether or not Steve Smith goes to the T20 World Cup because he's Steve Smith. But right now, if we're picking an 11 for the first test against India in November, wherever that test match is, because we don't know the schedule yet. But if we're picking that test match and Cameron Green's batting at number four and Mitchell Marsh is still batting at number six, is Steve Smith batting as an opener? Well, you'll want to see some exposed form at the lower level to make sure he's actually equipped for being an opener, because at the moment, I don't think we know. Like, the numbers don't look great. The public is saying, oh, it's definitely not working, and there's a big enough sample size for it to say that it hasn't worked. So I really think, if it is going to work, or if Steve Smith wants to make it work, he has to get back to problem solving and either dropping down the order, or he actually commits himself to playing however many Shield games he can for New South Wales before the start of that test series and really having a good go at it.
Yeah, I don't have any concerns about Smith, and I think if he opens or he bats in the middle order, he's going to score a truckload of runs next summer. But I think more of an existential question is about the whole Australian batting lineup. And honestly, Jono, I think so much is on the line for Australia tomorrow, because if they go on and win, if Head and Marsh and the tail can shepherd Australia to this victory, then I think it will be pretty much the status quo when we go into the series against India. I think the selectors, Cummins, McDonald, they'll all just trumpet out the same shit we've heard for the last 6 months about, you know, the trophy, you know, they've had good results and, you know, they're really confident with the batting lineup. But I think if actually they lose tomorrow, and then there's the, then Australia's forced to confront the reality of 2-1-all series, one against the West Indies, one against New Zealand, which are probably substandard results in the context of the World Test Championship. And therefore, I think it'll be absolute, all bets are off, and they could go into the summer next year against India with a very different batting lineup. And I don't want to go too into the details, but, you know, I can see a left field pick coming into opener and Smith going back to the middle order. But as I said, I think so much depends on tomorrow, Jono. Do you agree? If they get the result, then this will just shut everybody up. But if they lose, well, then they actually have to confront the fact that the batting is not clicking.
Well, for starters, yes, I do agree. We hear Andrew McDonald talk a lot about future-proofing the team. It's what they've done with Cameron Green. It's what they've done with bringing Lance Morris in around the squad, even though Lance Morris can't actually get a game at the moment. So it's interesting. Like, it's great that you mentioned India in the next summer, and you kind of look at what they've done just recently against England, is they've crushed England with a completely different set of players, which we're going to see out in Australia, the likes of Jaiswal and Safraz Khan and Jurel, just to name a few. And I think as much as Australia could probably name those players in the current Sheffield Shield setup, I don't think the selectors have an idea really of who their next in line are. Like, maybe they do for the bowlers. They definitely have one for wicketkeeping. But as far as top order batting goes, there's so many options. And because this test team has been so good, and mainly because of the bowling attack propping them up, they've kind of had to kick that can down the road a little bit, as you'd say. So I agree. It's a massive day tomorrow. If Head and Marsh and Carey and the skipper can pull this out of the fire for Australia, and they come home with the Trans-Tasman trophy, a 2-0 series win, we probably won't hear about the test team for a while. But it is rocky, as you say, you know, a 1-1 series result against the Windies, and what's looking likely to be a 1-1 series result against New Zealand, two test losses in four matches, there would be a little bit of cause for concern, regardless of the way that it goes. So, yeah, it will make for interesting reading. It will be an intriguing day tomorrow.
Absolutely. So Smith was out. Great ball from Matt Henry. I've got to give him credit. He's bowling fantastically. He's taken 9 wickets in the game already. Then, that was an exhilarating over when he got Marnus out. The crowd was going nuts. But then it turned up a notch, and Australia was 3 for 30 when Khawaja edged one off Henry, and Southee, diving away to his left at third slip, took an absolute ripper. And we've seen some great catching in this match. If you look at the catch of Phillips and catch of Marnus and then the catch of Southee. And so Australia were 3 for 30, and then they're 4 for 34 when we saw a bit of timid Cam Green. He sort of went to leave one off Sears. It bounced a little, hit the bat and deflected onto the stumps. So Australia were 4 for 34, but then Head and Marsh batted through the stumps. Head 17 not out, Marsh is 27 not out. Those two put on 43 undefeated. And I guess from an entertainment point of view, Jono, tomorrow you want to be there for the first ball, because you know Head and Marsh are going to go for it. The Kiwis are going to be searching for wickets. I think we've got an absolute humdinger of a day of Test cricket ahead of us.
Well, Travis Head, Mitchell Marsh, they're only really no one way, and that is to go hard or go home. And the Kiwis love getting involved, and they love beating Australia. So I agree. It's going to be a fascinating day of cricket tomorrow. And
prediction,
as we've just spoken about, there's a lot on the line. I sacrilegious. I think New Zealand get it done. I think Australia. I think they do get it done. It would be amazing for Australia, and it would be amazing for Travis Head, who's had his own form concerns, to pull it out of the fire. But I think Matt Henry's bowling as well as ever. Ben Sears looks a really likely type. So I think they'll get it done. But if Australia do it, then it'll be a fantastic win.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I think New Zealand will do it. But if one of Head or Marsh gets going, will we see that inferiority complex come out of the Kiwis and the shoulders drop too early? What I do think is it could be a thrilling finish. Who knows how close it could be at the end there. So I think a must-watch day of Test cricket. Well, that's it from us at Cricket Unfiltered. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back after day 4. Jono, where can the listeners find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Jono Baruch. You can find me on TikToks on the foxsports.com.au news page. And I'm a little bit everywhere at the moment, Menes, but it's great to be back here chatting cricket with you.
Thanks, Jono. Always great talking to you, especially after a great day like that. So Australia need 202 on the fourth day with 6 wickets in hand. I can't wait. Listeners, will chat after day 4.
This is a Piccolo Podcast production.
Sports Social Podcast Network.